David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 438. I'm your host, Steve Raker, down the comic book bunker, getting ready for the first day of school, along with my classmates, Andrew the LA Rabbit and Whirlwind X Kevin. Hey, guys, the bus will be here soon.
School started a long time ago out here, Steve. weeks ago.
What educational institution should the bus be for? Are we going to, like, Xavier's school? Are we doing Avengers Academy? Strange Academy?
We're going to the Taskmaster Academy, Steve.
Bob Diamond's dojo and Kung Fu school?
We're going to be henchmen.
Massachusetts Academy? Taskmaster's school for the henchmen?
Yeah, we'll be henchmen. That seems about appropriate for us. I don't want to be too ambitious, Steve.
Marvel Noise is the Marvel-centric semi-monthly podcast that's sponsored by nobody, which is twice a month for you readers of the Distinguished Competition. And with our first episode airing September 19th, 2007, this episode marks our 17th anniversary. 17 years.
Happy 17th anniversary. Is that paper, Steve? I don't remember.
So we're back from our summer vacays, although I still have no ceiling and holes in the roof of one room from that tree fall back in July. But we've got our back to school. What did you read this summer? Recent reads roundtable for you.
Or I can't believe that Sentinel thought you were a mutant and blew out your roof.
Or, you know, it could also be what cons you went to or movies you saw, you know, whatevs. You know how this thing goes.
If a tree falls in the bunker, does anybody hear it?
Yeah, well, down in the bunker, nothing was even disturbed. This is the safe room. But, not good to be up top. Not good to be on the outer shell. The outer defenses took a hit. But that's their job.
It's like those old forts, right? Like they built, what is it, like a star design or something? Where it's like the outer shell keeps on getting hit, but then that, so that nothing gets on the inside?
Right, and like if like all your enemies are to starboard, right? You can like pull the energy from the shield from the other side of the shield and like, you know, really buff it up on that side, right? I like when they do that. That's a good maneuver. Throw the shields from the back to the front.
Full power, forward shields.
All right. There's been a lot of comic books in my to-read pile, and then a lot of comic books moved from that pile into my to-talk-about-on-Marvel-Noise pile.
So, yeah, I didn't know we were supposed to read 50 books. If you would have told me this was a 50-book show, I guess I would have been prepared and I would have read 50 books.
Sorry, that's the president's initiative here in the States is, they want everybody reading. So everyone had to read 50 books this summer.
I got to get a jump start on that literacy problem.
Exactly. You're spared up there. You guys, you know.
Hey, I'd rather take that reading challenge than doing the laps and the squat thrusts and the chin-ups and all that other crap we used to have to do, Steve.
You gotta go up that rope ladder.
Well, they used to have down here in the States, the presidential fitness challenge thing.
Yeah.
And every year you'd be like, you could cheat on all of them except for the timing of the runs. Like you could just make up however many sit-ups you did or whatever, but they timed you on those laps. So no cheating on that.
Yeah. Like the shuttle run and everything. Forget that.
So has the president actually done any of these, or it's just called the...
No, this was like 10 presidents ago.
Yeah, I think they got like... It was so long ago they had Arnie doing the whole presidential fitness system.
Andrew and I are old. Kevin, have you been reading, keeping up with Amazing Spider-Man?
I'm doing my usual where I'm always behind. I mean, I guess that says something in itself.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, I mean, these last couple of series have been on and off, you know, highs and lows for us both.
It's so highs and lows. And I think I'm more fascinated by the people that love the run. Because then I'm just like, well, what are they digging about it? And then I'm like, I'm reading through it, but I feel like we're definitely in a low as we head towards the conclusion, I feel like.
Well, there was a milestone-ish that just came out a few weeks ago at the time of this recording of Amazing Spider-Man 950, and it's written by Zeb Wells with art by Romita Jr. and Scott Hanna. But, you know, during Zeb Wells' writing, Amazing Spider-Man, there's been kind of like this evolving story that's really, when looking back, it's been the main arc of his run that he keeps circling back to. He keeps feeding with some of the stories that go in between when, you know, before he does circle back. And then, you know, when he does touch back upon it, it's like for events and milestones such as this. Like, it's the whole bit with Tombstone's daughter who wears the current version of the original Beetle armor, who was she was a great part of the Nick Spencer Superior Foes of Spider-Man in the previous run and all that. But she's in that relationship with Robbie Robertson's son, and then they plan a wedding, and then that becomes the catalyst for the gang war crossover event, and that sets up Tombstone as the new kingpin of crime in New York City. So like, that's been the sort of ongoing story that keeps evolving. And in this milestone 950th issue of Amazing Spider-Man, we see Spider-Man's like PR attack against Tombstone that he's doing. Whenever he foils a low-level crime, he's making comments and stuff that suggest that he and Tombstone are in cahoots, because Spidey ended up taking out the Rose for Tombstone and inadvertently setting Tombstone up to take over. So using that fact, he's trying to use that now to his advantage and kind of make kind of a groundswell of sort of distrust, or at least questioning like their loyalty to Tombstone and maybe Tombstone's loyalty to, you know, to the lifestyle, so to speak. So Tombstone retaliates this issue by going after Peter Parker, who can't reveal he's Spidey, right? Because he's Peter Parker and he's got to not. But he also is trying not to get killed without showing that he's Spidey, which is tough. And how he gets out of it is pretty clever. And it was a satisfying read. And then the next bit gets set up with Tombstone's daughter turning state's evidence against him for his trial. So here we go to the, maybe we are building towards the conclusion of this storyline, which may end up being the conclusion of Wells's run.
Yeah, I think so. Because he started with the whole Tombstone bit, trying to make like one of the great Tombstone stories.
There's also a few backups in the issue because it's a anniversary issue, right? One's a backup is a prequel to the story that's in this issue, kind of the behind the scenes that had to happen for the clever way that he got out of getting killed by Tombstone. And then the second one is a weird tale of Paul. Mary Jane's interdimensionally displaced husband. It's like, it's Paul. And then there's a multi-page gallery of a whole bunch of little thumbnails of every cover of Amazing Spider-Man to date.
That must be a real great couple of pages, postage stamps.
I honestly, I'd rather that than a reprint of, you know what I mean? To pad out the issue. At least those are a couple of backups.
They could have thrown some cutaway, Steve, of the web shooters.
Paul's apartment. Here's where Paul sleeps. Here's where Paul makes his breakfast.
Yeah, I guess they don't want to give you like a Marvel Masterwork pinup, or they want or get someone to do some funny gag strip or something.
Anyway, so this was a cool issue. It made me. It had few enough characters and heavy on the action, and really it was all one situation happening. So I found it to be pretty action-packed and a fun read.
I'm hoping Spider-Man dies 8 times in the next one.
Well,
one for every leg.
Somewhat yes, related, exactly. But not really related. One of the last Marvel pages of original art, one of the few, I don't have much Marvel original art, was the last page of Superior Foes number 6, the big... the Steve Lieber, but it's the big tombstone like 3/4 splash where he shows up, and you know, because it's his daughter, and that was the big fancy reveal in that one. So
right,
this was years ago. I was at some show and he had his book there, and I was like, I'll have that, thank you very much. So
nice.
I have a lot of Marvel pages, but that's one of them, because I love that series, and I liked that. I mean, I've read some of this Amazing Spider-Man, but I kind of liked that take on those characters, so I thought they were good as kind of goofy, funny characters. Not that you can't, look, you know, no man is an island, we contain multitudes and all that, but it just was fun for me.
I thought you'd get some original page where one character is urinating on something.
Well, they did remark my addiction.
Mine too. Mine too.
That was, does humor belong in comics? I don't know, Steve. It's pretty serious business. Maybe we shouldn't take this stuff so lightly. But,
He did in my actual comic single issue. And then when the omnibus came out and I saw Metacon the next time, I had him do it to the omnibus. Pretty funny.
Yeah, I don't think he comes this way, which is sad.
Hmm.
Or maybe I don't know.
I think he's one of the Portland guys, so yeah. That would be a long haul. But maybe you guys should organize some kind of Christmas con with Santa or something, because you're so close to him. You could have him show up.
You know, we used to have like some like holiday Christmas market type of show, but I think the last one was in 2019.
Tombstone's one of those characters that was created, villains that was created during the time that I wasn't reading comics, when I was, you know, like during high school and the beginning of college. So when I came back and they were doing some of the Sal Buscema drawn Spectacular Spider-Man stuff, where Tombstone's coming back and making, you know, Robbie's life hell and all that business, I'm like, who's this guy? And basically how I was able to wrap my head around it pretty quickly to get into it and keep reading was like, okay, it's basically just Hammerhead for the next decade. It's like, okay, this is the 80s Hammerhead. Hammerhead was 70s. This is 80s. The same. There's Dick Tracy villains, you know?
That's a good description of Spider-Man villains in general. Just some goofy one gimmick.
The 90s Hammerhead and then the 00 Hammerhead?
Yeah, Hammerhead was big in the late 70s. But then he sort of dropped off and Tombstone took his place.
I don't know. I always thought of Hammerhead as one of the big guys. I don't know. But then I think I had a skewed perspective I've talked about where, like, you don't know who the big guys are.
Right, they're so above it all. They're not the ones getting caught and getting punched in the face. They're hiding off, sipping Foster's in the shade in Mexico.
Like, yeah, guy was like Norman Osborn. Like, if you were an old fan or like a new fan, but if you came in when Harry was there for a bit, maybe you're just like, oh yeah, Harry, he's the big Green Goblin.
Well, there were lots of what's nice is that you can phase him in or out. Maybe you like the big man. Maybe you like the master planner. Don't forget, the owl has come in and out of vogue. Like, it's nice that if the team is like, oh, we need a crime boss, you've got your, you know, riches to pick on, and you can be like, oh, he's, you know, been working behind the scenes and now he's coming forward. I always like that.
It's and so weird.
They do those gang things where they're always battling over territory and stuff.
Yeah, if you're a crime boss, you can kind of get a second life there.
Bringing up Norman makes me think, like, you know, all those years that Norman was dead, we had Harry as the goblin a few times and stuff, and then having that big poignant, again, in the Zabby Cemetron Spectacular Spider-Man stuff, to have the big death in the issue with the hologram on the cover and everything. And then they bring back Harry and they bring back Norman, and then they keep Norman and get rid of Harry. It's like too much Osborn. But I don't know. I kind of wish they would just sort of kept Harry and never brought back Norman. But
yeah,
him so many different ways now, right? Like they used him with that whole Dark Reign stuff. They've used him as the Spider-Man's mentor buddy guy. They've used him as this Golden Goblin thing. They've used him in so many different ways. It's crazy.
Yeah, I just don't always dig the ways that they use him. So, I mean, like it's sort of like he had a clean record up into his death. And then when you brought him back, it's like now he has like a spotty record.
What's spotty about him and Gwen Stacy?
Oh, God.
Or other.
I forgot about that.
Thanks for reminding us about that one.
On that note, who else has read something?
Okay. Got to clean the ledger here. I got an issue of Moon Knight. Phases of the Moon Knight for you. Yeah, they keep on churning out more Moon Knight books, don't they?
Well, I like that he's like a big player now, though, right? Like I think part of it is because Jed McKay's writing a quarter of the books in the Marvel Universe, and he really likes Moon Knight, you know?
I guess so, but he's not involved in this.
But it's based off of some of his ideas and things.
Yeah, it's because we have the first story here. Erica Schultz and Manuel Garcia, which is the Once and Future Knight, which deals with our. Did we reveal who it was? Moon Knight, this Black Moon Knight guy is?
Yeah, that was so many arcs ago. That was at the beginning of that run. Sure, go ahead.
Norman Osborn?
If you don't want to, I will. The first story, it's an anthology series. It's going to be a limited series, but it's going to look back at like different Fists of Khonshu legacy-wise, like over the millennia. But the first story is 15 pages, and it details how the Shroud, like the path he took to masquerading as Moon Knight in the first arc of the current Vengeance of the Moon Knight series.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's fine. I mean,
yep,
it's good and everything. And it has some, those guys that, what was it, Spider-Woman?
Right.
I'm trying to remember
the Night Club or whatever they were called. I think they were called the Night Club. But he was part of them. The Night Shift?
Yeah, probably the Night Shift.
But he was a part of them. The Shroud. So it made, you know, it was such a jump to have the reveal that it was the Shroud doing all this bad stuff as Moon Knight that this story actually kind of needed to be told of, like, how the heck did he get there?
Yeah. So, I mean, that was interesting in itself and how he's a little, he's always been a little weird, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm trying to, was he the guy with Dark Force powers or am
yes.
I? Okay. Yeah. Kind of blind or was that at one point?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of the same guy. Thank you. Sorry, you know, some of these names, adjective and body part or costume part are always blend together after a while.
Yeah, that was one of those guys that was hard for me to get a handle on because I'm thinking he came out before and then like there was some new guys that I was more into. And then it's like, oh, here's a Shroud. And I'm like, who's this Shroud fellow?
I had all the Shroud's appearances just as he popped up in the Bronze Age when I was a kid picking up the issues. So I kind of thought it was cool when he popped up because it's like, oh, here's the Shroud popping up in a, you know, he would pop up in a Marvel team up or when someone would go to San Francisco, like Daredevil or something like that. And then in the modern age,
wasn't he a Spider Woman and some of those? Because she was on the West Coast.
He did, yeah, right, exactly. Yep.
Yeah. So it's fun to see him with his old crew here. But for my money, what you want to read is The Crusader by Benjamin Percy and Rod Rees here.
Very cool.
Like this is just a lot of fun. And then, you know, it's sort of like in that typical classic Moon Knight Sienkiewicz vein here.
I thought the same thing, but you know, it's and the first issue of Moon Knight where they do Moon Knight's origin, and it's all in the desert, and the storm and all that stuff, storms happening in the desert and the wind blown. It looks so different, yet it's so evocative.
Yes.
Here, you know, and part of it is happening during the day versus at night, like it was for Mark Spector, but really cool. It's a knight from like the Crusades. It's like a Knight Templar dude, and he, you know, makes the journey to becoming a Fist of Khonshu.
And then they have that whole like Egyptian sequence, but the real other, well, I shouldn't say the real cool part. Like there's it a is. Lot of cool things in here.
It is the real cool part. Tell us.
But yes, Mr. A, I don't want to be called Apocalypse is in here because, you know, he's hanging out back then too. So they have a little battle here.
That's En Sabanur to you.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I'm glad someone can pronounce that thing.
But that's cool if they're doing like an old thing from that time period and have like the Crusade Moon Knight guy fight Apocalypse. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
And they show it in like hieroglyphics on the side of a pyramid too. I thought that was clever.
Yeah, it's like Thor bumping into Apocalypse or something. I'm like, that's always fun.
Steve's waiting for the Pharaoh to show up.
Yep.
He's waiting for Kang to show up in that tomb to go retrace his steps in that same path that every other Marvel team goes back in time and goes back to that same time. And then they need to get back to the present.
Or be trapped there forever.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was a good issue. I'll be checking out more Moon Knight. Yay!
All right, Super Steve. I heard you have a lot of books.
All right. I was thinking Andrew was up next.
Oh sure, I've been enjoying the What If Donald Duck series of books.
Oh.
Did I talk about the first one? I got the became Thor, but I also got the Wolverine one. But these are, like, I'm not a duck guy, much to my eternal shame. So it's fun seeing, this is what we all thought when I bought those Spider-Man variant covers.
Yes, yes.
So, my wife was so bummed when she's like, wait, it's just a cover? Like, yeah, just, but then they had these out. So I've been, I guess they've got Minnie Mouse coming up soon. I don't blame anybody that, like, I'm enjoying them, but I also know $5 is kind of a bit, I don't know. This is where I can see people's temptation, but this is Donald Duck, Donald Thor versus the Stone Ducks of Saturn. So it's just like the other one. They take the origin and inject.
Yeah.
This gets Donald and his nephews. I thought this one worked a bit better than Wolverine, to be honest with you.
I didn't read the Wolverine one, but I did read this one, and I really enjoyed it.
I heard this one was good.
I thought it was pretty clever, and I thought it was very ducky and very Thor-y and Marvel-y at the same time. Like, if they only did one thing and it was this, I thought that would be enough of the, like, what if, you know, because they have to match the DC doing their Warner Brothers characters with with the DC universe. So.
And it's also nice they're rewarding those guys that did all those covers. Now they get to, you know, have fun doing interiors on these. Yeah, I like this. I like how they made the rock creatures.
Yes.
Ducks, too.
That was great. Stone duck guys.
But, yeah, it's basically taking that first Thor where he fights the I can't remember the name of the race, but they were made popular in the Thor number three movie. But the whole race that comes down and he stops them, and they're playing with the old Donald Blake, where he would find the cane and tap it and become Thor and all that stuff. Which, man, how long ago was that? Like that right. has to have lasted way less than any other era of Thor at this point. We might have had Broken Bones Thor last longer than Kane Thor from the Walt Simonson days. But yeah, what if Donald Duck became the mighty Thor? If you like silly duck stories and Donald being featured, that this will be your thing. Because it's way more that than Marvel at all, I would say, on the balance of things. Plus the back has, you know, process materials to whatever extent you enjoy that. I prefer that to having a bunch of tiny postage stamp cover reproductions, I guess. So I will continue. I will get What If Minnie Became Captain Marvel in the future, should I come across it. I want to keep these, keep dumb, silly comics alive.
That's a noble pursuit.
It is. They can't all be like grim and gritty and all that stuff. Sometimes you just want some fun, silly comics.
Or a mix of both, which was the Annihilation 2099 limited series that I read.
I have that one, Steve, but it's in a pile. I haven't read it yet. All right. Why should I read this?
Yeah, well, that's what I'll do. I won't spoil the
spoil whatever you like.
Real story beats, but I'll give you an idea of why you want to get into this and kind of what ground it covers. The series is written by Steve Orlando, nice guy. And the neat thing is each issue focuses on a different Marvel cosmic character, but the 2099 version of them. And each issue is drawn by a different artist, too. But it works because you're dealing with different stories with different characters, right? So the first issue is Nova 2099, The Last Nova, with art by Ibram Roberson. And the second issue is Star-Lord 2099, The Tyrant Star, who is Quasar 2099. And that's drawn by Joe Lewis. And the third issue is Red Hulk 2099, The Rage Reborn, and he fights Terax, a 2099 version of Terax, who's not so much different because they're kind of timeless characters. That's drawn by Pete Woods. Yep. Because they've already done Hulk 2099.
So. It's true.
And Silver Surfer 2099 in issue 4, Tragical History versus Mephisto, with art by Ario Anandito. And each issue has a backup story that's drawn by Dale Eaglesham, also written by Steve Orlando, called Dracula Risen. And it concludes in issue 5 of the series as Dracula 2099. And actually, Kevin, there's actually maybe a little Darkhawk 2099 in there, too.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
And it all leads into a vampirific Conquest 2099 limited series that's coming your way soon. Fun stuff. Marvel Cosmic 2099, right? I mean, and it doesn't get into all the other 2099 stuff. There's no Alchemex. There's no any of that stuff. It's just outer space future stuff, but all goes somewhere, and then it continues, right? Like Dracula and his band of merry men are going to march somewhere.
It's a future shock.
I think a few years ago they started with this 2090, and I've been liking when I see those series, I pick them up and just been really enjoying. It's a manageable amount. They usually don't have more than one or two going at once, so. It's just a fun, and I was out of comics for the time period, so I've bought a bunch of the back issues, and I don't know, it's just something about these pocket Marvel universes is very attractive to me lately. They're kind of manageable, and you can get your head around them pretty easy. And they oftentimes let things happen. Changes in status quo. I mean, changes happen in the big one, like we talked about with Thor and Don Blake and all that, but they happen a bit more quickly.
What I liked about this being in space is it is insular of all of the continuity of the 2099 stuff. So even though there was dozens and dozens and dozens of issues in this universe, publishing universe that's been out there, this really has its own fresh start to it, which is fun. But it's going to connect back up, I bet, in the Conquest thing.
Yeah, why not? I mean, I'm sure I'm missing loads of the Easter eggs for the hardcore 2099ers, but all the stuff I've read, I've felt like, oh, this is fun. I understand it. I don't feel lost. I mean, they're crazy characters and everything, but they're based on analogs from this time period, so you can usually figure out what's going on without too much work, you know? It's not like I'm reading 90s X-Men or something.
Wait, wow.
Can someone get me a flowchart? I don't know who any of these people are.
I don't know who Forearm is. Who's Slurmo? Jeez, Sumo.
So Cannonball Reaper? Can't die, or he can die?
Anyway, you're talking about a pocket universe, right?
Yeah, the little side one.
So is Wolverine Revenge a pocket universe?
I hope so. Because it was a lot more. I picked it up because of the. I like Hickman normally, and I like Capullo, but I'm staying for Capullo. So far, I'm pretty. Well, did you see the X? So, Kevin, which version did you get? It was like a bagged version. And the guy in my shop said, it's, oh, no, they just added some extra gore or something.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I guess $5 ain't enough, so I just got the regular one. I was happy with a $5.
I got the regular. But I happened to see, like, some negative reviews for this one. So I was just like, do people think this is, like, a bad comic, or is it? Or then I'm like, is it like, I'm trying to figure out if it's another reason that they sort of like, oh, it's out of continuity, or like, oh, it's seems like it's like written for the artist, or I'm like looking for another reason that maybe they didn't like this, like, or a secondary reason too, right?
I think one of the issues I had with it was they went right for big extremes, like, hundreds of millions of people have died, and that
is true.
That kind of weird scaling thing. The other thing that I didn't enjoy was this is a Wolverine book, so all the other characters are going to be super incompetent. So the other heroes are easily taken out and disposed of without a second thought, which is always like, I get it, it's a Wolverine book, but some of these other characters are formidable in their own right, and to have them sort of played like complete buffoons. I mean, I don't know if you guys know this, but Dugan's like a effing robot or something, so you just can't take him out that easily.
He's not Robo Dugan, is what you're saying?
Isn't he? Aren't all Dugans Robo Dugans? Unless I'm reading from the 40s.
Maybe in this one, he's not Robo Dugan.
So I did not enjoy the side, like, obviously the S.H.I.E.L.D. agents and stuff, but main title characters that are supposed to be skilled and accomplished falling to, like, is Omega Red supposed to be, I never could take him that seriously.
See,
so
that,
to make him.
I feel like this is one of those things where, like, kids took, like, Mr. Sinister and Omega Red and all those guys seriously, where other people are like, why is he taken seriously? So then writers are like, well, I guess we better write them seriously now because, you know, he seems to have gotten over.
I guess he's a lot more competent and powerful than I would have given him credit for.
Yeah. But yeah, it's certainly much different than I expected. Like, I don't think I don't know if I was necessarily expecting, like, a clinical diagram and everything of this story, but Certainly a different experience.
Well, I also bet you could jump in it too. As I was reading this, I felt, man, there's a bunch. This is set up. It's setting up for Wolverine to do his thing. So, if you're on the fence, maybe just look at two, because spoiler, the things in the title, I'm sure Wolverine's gonna get some revenge, and the setup isn't particularly juicy. It's not so over the top like Old Man Logan or something, where they're really gonna make the initial descent or inciting action be particularly horrific. Like, it's bad, but it's not that kind of over the top, even though it is over the top, just on numbers.
That's what I mean. It is pretty crazy. I mean, I think I was expecting, oh, it's going to be a simple, like, Wolverine versus dinosaurs. And it was kind of more than that.
Yeah, yeah. So, basically, there is a gigantic cataclysmic event that has killed hundreds of millions, possibly billions, and placed the fate of the Northern Hemisphere, I guess, or Eastern, Western Hemisphere, some huge part of the globe is at risk, and Wolverine and a select crew need to save the day. Unfortunately, Captain America and Winter Soldier are all a bunch of losers who get chipped off very quickly. So now it's going to be down to Wolverine against a mustachioed colossus.
You didn't mention that Canada didn't fare that well.
No, well, you know, I'm sure there's going to be some kind of Alpha Flight thing of the Survivors show, right? Issue like 5 or 6, there's going to be, I don't know, Box or something showing up, right? Box. Am I wrong, Kevin?
Wind Shear's going to show up.
I mean, we need some kind of thing, and that way he can have that moment where he's like, oh, man, oh, Canada, you know.
Back to the cabin and lick his wounds.
Yeah. Some of those...
Oh, Silver Fox, I miss you so much.
Wait, but they have that, the new... Wait, or they'll bring in the new Weapon H guy, the Hulk Wolverine dude.
Silver Fox could be alive in this world, because, like, Nick Fury is... And they still had Helicarrier, well, not for long, but...
I mean, I hope we see Tagger.
I think it's fun, you know. You got Capullo. You're gonna do Wolverine. That part, wild, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's why I'm gonna buy it for his art alone. But I was expecting a little better from Hickman, if I'm being honest.
Fair enough.
But yeah. So if you want to see the greatest supervillain in the Marvel Universe, Omega Red, take out all your heroes.
I mean, if you're Deadpool a fan of the seems... 90s, it's going to probably give you a little more mileage there.
Yeah, Deadpool seemed a little bit off as well. Like, much more toned down. I'm like, boy, I thought Hickman would have loved having... Like, Deadpool is one of those guys I feel like you got to go all in. Like, why have him in if you're going to kind of middle of the road it? Go full Jerry Dugan on him, you know?
Yeah, it's not his story, though. He's just a foil.
Yeah, but I think you need to ask the people that did that Wolverine Origins movie why you don't go all the way. Why did you just do that?
Yeah. For real. I think it's all going to end up being a Danger Room simulation.
I was thinking it could very easily be some weird thing like that, that it's not. It takes place in our world, but it wasn't really happening.
No way. He's going to wake up in that hammock with that picture in his lap, like the meme that goes. It was all a dream. But yeah, get it alone for the artwork, people. I mean, obviously. I mean, I got print. I don't know if it would have been better waiting for the fabulous digital version, but I was like, yeah, I got to buy this.
There we go.
But not paying the extra dollar. Sorry, people. Sorry, Marvel. Keep trying. I appreciate the hustle, but I was glad my store owner was level with me. Now, I would have paid extra dollar. Guess what? If they would have done, Kevin. Slid in one of those sweet trading cards.
Oh.
I would have paid. If they're going full 90s and did the little, even those goofy, terrible, like, tearaway ones they inserted.
I was wondering if you want the plastic wrapper in the Why the staples?
No, I don't care. A trading card anyway, either dropped in or in the book where you got to perforate them out or whatever. That, to me, would have screamed 90s and worth a dollar. Totally. Come on, trading cards? We've had fun with trading cards before.
All right, Kev, what else you got?
What do I got?
Yeah. What you got?
I got a Submariner book.
The new Jason Aaron written book?
Yes. So I pretty much like bought this based on the creative team. Like you have Aaron Davidson. Because the promo picture of a beat up Neymar here, where he's like, I guess, in a hospital bed. There's like all these tubes coming out of him. Looks like he's broken his ankles or his legs and he's chained up. Not the greatest promo for me. Like, I'm sure there's someone that looks at that and go, oh man, who did that? Like, sort of like the
right.
Like Onslaught taking on the Juggernaut. Who did that to the Juggernaut? Like, just for me, I'm thinking, okay, that's an image. I mean, I hopefully the story is better than an image because that doesn't really do it. But you know, luckily there's more to this story than just Neymar being beaten up.
Hey, good covers can. I wasn't super interested, but I love that they had the ad for that new Mystique, the Declan Chauvey one. I love that image of her on the rock with the knife and the gun and everything. Cool. For some reason, I'm like, wasn't that interested, saw that. I'm like, you know, that looks pretty cool. That's a great version of Mystique.
That always helps. So, yeah, this series, I guess we're going to be writing the current history of the underwater part of the Marvel Universe with all the different realms fighting each other, rivaling with each other, and causing a whole lot of chaos.
I need a map, yeah. Kevin. I want a map.
Hey, I wonder if they'll give us a map at some point. But you know what would happen in a series like this? The map would change every issue.
Yeah, that's true.
As they got new territories or lost them or whatever. So, I don't know. But yeah, it's kind of, this is one of those nebulous things, right? You're like, oh, this was Atlantis. No, this is old Atlantis.
Right.
And then
old Atlantis.
This is the area, the Atlantis you never knew about. This is the forgotten Atlantis, Atlantis that sunk.
Yep.
This is the touristy spot. This is where you get great gelato. This is
Pismo Beach.
It's true. But yeah, you got to say that Namor has been around the block these last few years, doing some good stuff, not so good stuff. So
he was the Phoenix.
Exactly.
He was an X-Man. He was everything.
He was fighting Cap, the Winter Soldier, and
he was a bad guy.
Yeah. He had that whole team of what was it like? Not Defenders of the Dark. No, why do I think Defenders of the Dark? It was some weird name anyways. Some Atlantean team. So yeah, he's in prison. And then just in a bad way. You know, people are, he's a prisoner. And people don't much like him. So, they beat him up. Not let him have any water. Because, you know, if he has some water, he might be able to do something with that. You know, get his strength back. But even if it seems like he's just going to stay there, right? He's happy to, not so happy, but he's willing to live out his days, it seems like. Not wanting to cause any trouble to stay in this prison. And then they have, like, these flashback sequences, too, to him as a kid.
Is he shaving with fire yet?
Does he have a blue vest? He needs that, Kevin.
No, but I'm happy to say, by the end of this issue, he has that classic black vest with the gold bracelets and gold belt. I'm happy to say he's wearing that costume by the end of this issue.
To be honest, I was skipping over the flashback to when he's a kid parts.
Yeah, I can see that. But do you notice his shorts are like the are like that costume where it looks like it's like the dark shorts and like the yellow band on the legs, and I'm like, hey, he has a kid's version of like that outfit, which is funny. So yeah, he runs into some enemies from back home and everything, and then I guess he's gonna go play games of Thrones and or House of Atlantis. Does that work?
Imperius Rex.
Yes, he's gonna do that whole bit in the next issue. So, I mean, I thought it was a good time.
Jason Aaron tells a good tale, so I'll be interested to see the scope of it. I finished reading the Blood Hunt event, written by Jed McKay, with art by Pepe Larraz, and this is issues 4 and 5 of 5. But Andrew, I read the Red Band edition.
Whoa. Boy, look at you, Steve. Isn't there a spinoff thing? Because I was at the store recently and surprised to see Blood Hunt stuff still on the racks or whatever. So I guess it's popular.
Well, there's Blood Hunters is the book that's kind of spun off from it.
Okay, because I was like, whoa, I thought that was done and dusted. It's no longer summer.
Unless you're talking about Dust and Vampires.
Exactly, but that Montesi formula, Steve. I can't stand up to it.
So in the back end, third act of this event, you've got Varney, who's the first vampire, is the one who's possessed Blade and made him like a Thanos-like big bad type character. And similarly, he's got his like Corvus Glaive type coven of superpowered agents who give the Avengers a hard time. And he's using the Dark Force power like it's infinity charged, and he's erected a giant monstrosity of a temple as his throne room like Thanos did and everything. And Black Panther's been turned to be a vampire, and so has Miles Morales and Doctor Strange too.
No, I thought you were going to say Doctor Sun.
Doctor Sun is nowhere near the vampires. He's learned. As they have like two side stories going with that fit quite nicely into McKay's other books that he writes. You've got Doctor Strange's astral form and Clea seeking help from Doctor Doom into turning back the Dark Force and bringing back the sun. And then you've got Hunter's Moon, the other Fist of Vengeance, whatever, and Tigra. They travel to Asgard to spring the imprisoned Khonshu, and how they do it was a super cool reveal too, and made perfect story sense. And then with Khonshu free, he can resurrect Moon Knight, you know, seeding back into McKay's book and giving us that other Moon Knight's back deal. Now we understand why and how. And so it all leans heavily into the Doctor Strange book and Moon Knight as it should, and even Avengers. And then Doctor Strange 18, written by McKay with Pascal Ferry, is McKay's last book of Strange. And it's actually a great epilogue issue to both Blood Hunt and McKay's run on Strange overall. They revisit a whole bunch of different elements that appeared earlier in McKay's run, and they kind of lock in Clea and Strange's bond, despite Strange no longer being Sorcerer Supreme again. But I've been enjoying these McKay books. Have you, as Avengers, gotten any better for you, Kevin?
I haven't gone back.
Oh.
I don't want to be a total downer, but I don't know. Like, McKay is, I've kind of fallen off that whole wagon. I mean, I read that second issue of his X-Men 2 and wasn't so hot.
The new arc of Avengers is like a new era, even though it's still written by McKay, but he's got Valerio Schiti as the new artist. And as the cover boasts, Storm is joining the Avengers.
For the first time, except it's not the first time.
Right, because that old all ages out of continuity Avengers book from back in the 2000s, she was an Avenger.
What Remember? About when she showed up during the Bendis era?
Yep. But this was even before that, when her, remember her and the Ant-Man's daughter.
Yeah, that was so weird, because it was just like, yeah, let's just create some crazy thing and then try to write a story around it. Kind of like, I guess, like 50s, 60s DC, where I always seem like some wild, like, my head is an ant. And then it's like, how are you going to write a story with your head as an ant?
I don't want to sound like Guy Rich, but maybe too many Avengers, Steve?
In this Avengers 17, it's a good transition issue, too, because they're kind of dealing with their failures and having let Orcus in the X-Men books rise and do their whole genocidal thing, and then allowing the Blood Hunt to happen. You know, T'Challa got infiltrated and turned. That sentient floating city headquarters that they have was taken over and crashed. So here they're like regrouping the best they can, and they're leaning on each other. And Sam, as Captain America, goes and recruits Storm. And then they give you the tease that Hyperion is coming. He's been observing the Earth from a distance, and he's judged the Earth. And now he intends to play executioner, and he warns the Earth that he's flying on the way, and he's going to kill everybody when he gets here.
That Hyperion.
Yeah. So that's fun.
I mean, I guess.
All right, Andrew, what do you got?
All right, a quick aside. I feel like Marvel has moved to a lot more of the code not in the comic. Go to our website and submit a photo and all that stuff.
Oh, which, for a long time.
Yeah, I feel like the delays now are bad. I don't want to hassle them because I'm sure they're overworked, but it takes, at least for me, I feel like 4 working days usually, maybe 3 to get, after you submit your request, to actually get the code back. And I guess it must work out because they save printing the code in the books, but man, those guys must be overwhelmed with the number of things, because I feel like a lot of the books I'm getting, most of them seem to be scanned the cover, don't have a code in it. But I did go through the first 5 issues of Venom Separation Anxiety. This is the Michelini Sandoval set after Emperor Doom graphic novel. Younger readers may not be super familiar with that, because it came out a while ago. Back when Marvel had the graphic novel line of original ones. So I feel like they've done a fun job. So this is Venom when he's on his own. He's still angry. He's still eating people, but trying to do the right thing. Still hates Spider-Man, which I guess that's always constant. But and so what happens is, after the events of Emperor Doom, the Purple Man has been somewhat nerfed. He's one of the key parts of that. But now he has to be in physical contact. Well, in the course of the machinations of this book, a piece of Venom is on him now. So he can now be in contact with people from further away, because, you know, Venom has the stretchy thing. And I do like how Sandoval and the team, this is a good book for them. Because Venom needs to be ridiculously oversized, and all the webs and tendrils and tongues and teeth and all that stuff, you don't want that restrained. At least I don't for Venom. I want that silly and over the top and impossible muscle groupings and that sort of thing. Like, that's where Venom shines, and that's this. So Venom now has to reclaim that little tiny piece. But the Purple Man has his own agenda. Plus, he's at a pawn of all these other forces that want to use him for their own means. So in the fifth issue, this comes to a head as one squad has kidnapped him to use him to influence people and leaders and subtly take over the world, where he just wants to kill everybody in the world except Doom and then kill himself. So he knows that Dr. Doom caused the end of the world. I mean, it's very dark. But what's nice is he's all venomized out, too. So the team gets to do a purple version of Venom all crazy. I don't think we're also in the continuity. We haven't reached full, like there's 900 symbiotes and everything. So I don't really like that part of the world where there's, you know, everybody and their mother is, I mean, you can have the one guy, but then, I don't know, Kevin, you know the family tree of the symbiote characters better than I do, but there were just too many of them for me.
Yeah.
So this, I think, doesn't have those. So he's very proprietary about that one piece of him. So the whole time he's been nervous about being taken over, but you can guess the twist of him being taken over to how he defeats him. And I enjoyed it. I'm like, this, and he has a nice moment with a former reporter that he used to work with as Eddie Brock. And yeah, I think the first five issues are good. Excited to see where it goes. There's no word about what's the contents of issue six or anything, but I feel like this is a solid team and I'm in for the long haul.
All right. Look forward to more Slinky Venom.
Yes. Yes, big, muscular, crazy, crouched over, horror. Yeah, and for some reason, well, I think the issue with the Hickman thing is they went and killed all those people. Were this, it was just a plan to kill all those people, so huh? While it is over the top and silly, you know you're not going to get there. And Venom himself battles with whether to kill this guy or not. You know, that kind of thing goes on throughout the book. And I felt that it captured that time period, but told with a modern sensibility. So I feel Marvel has been doing really well with these old man comics. They've been doing all these little series with older creators pitched an older crowd, I presume, but told with the modern, those settings, but a modern story told in it, and enjoyed them all. Like we talked about the Goblin, DeMatteis one and all those other ones, I think.
Yeah.
I think we covered that. That's why I didn't talk about that one. But yeah, Venom Separation Anxiety. It's fun. And because it's set back then, I don't have to worry about all the, wait, which Venom is this and which cousin is that and which, where's the god of Venoms and all that stuff.
Well, if they go too far back, you'll be like, wait, why is Thor like that? Wait, why is Spider-Man wearing this costume? Wait, who's Captain America?
Is the cat cosmic?
Boy, yeah, but I like Emperor Doom, but I could see why you might, you're going to put a modern lens on some things, because, I mean, while stories like that are good, it sort of had, I don't remember exact, but it's just like, oh, and then world peace happened. And then a supervillain solved racism, and it sort of has bits like that, and you're like, wait, what? Like, it was just weird things that jumped to, and you just had to sort of, like, fit together the pieces in your brain, but you sort of couldn't figure out sometimes how certain things happened.
Yep. You just had to get the idea that things were good so that then they could come crashing down before the end of this thing's over.
Yeah.
We only got so many pages here.
Yeah, those graphic novels, though, they were very impressive to me as a young person. Welcome. It was a fancy presentation. It was the idea of this, a whole kind of complete story in one thing. I mean, now everyone's like, what's the big deal, dummy? That happens all the time. But it was a novelty, at least for me. I mean, they had those big, but normally they were pretty gimmicky, you know, like Spider-Man meets Superman or something like that. These were just sort of a creative team had a story to tell, and they told it in this prestige fancy format.
Right, because they were thin but also square bound, instead of being on the racks or a shelf at my LCS, they kept them stacked right on the counter next to the register. Love that. It's like, ooh, a new graphic novel.
Yeah, and at some places, I seem to remember them also being like kind of back on the wall, cover out, like looking very
super very
fancy. And you're like, whoa, look at what's this new mutants business?
For sure. All right, Kevin, give us another.
Well, it's funny that somehow I already talked about Uncanny X-Men on Indie Comic Book Noise.
Hmm.
I mean,
I know somehow, that show. I like somehow, those guys.
Somehow Phil, the Ottawa Otter, got it out of me.
Yeah, somehow. You talk more Marvel on that show than I talk DC on this show.
There's no way. Don't believe that, listeners. Do not believe that. Andrew definitely talks more DC. But yeah, I already went into quite a bit. But that wasn't a hot book either. I mean, we're in a string of X-books that aren't hot debuts.
Agreed. But you love that AR stuff, right, Kevin?
Yes.
But you know what, Kevin? To be fair, and I'm not too crazy about these first round of issues in it for any of these X-books, we're coming off of the crash of a whole big, long-running status quo that also, remember, when those first Hickman X-books came out, it was like, what the heck's going on? We had to, like, let it play. All the stuff with Moira and McTaggart and everything, you had no idea what was going on. And it had a pretty, I mean, it was intriguing, but it had a pretty slow burn to start as well. I kind of figure, like, after such a big shift that I kind of just have to wait for the books to get into their second, maybe third arc, and then kind of see what the rhythms are and what each start to get a handle on what each book is rather than, I mean, it's really hard right now.
Yeah, well, that's the difference. The Hickman books were intriguing. I don't think these are particularly intriguing.
Agreed.
And then a character shows up with like antlers or whatever, and I'm like, wasn't there like a newish X-Men character that had antlers as well? And I'm like, is that supposed to be the same character? Because I'm not even really that familiar with that character.
They're spreading the good characters around and putting weird characters in each. They're putting enough characters in each group that I don't know or care about to make me not be too keen on any of the teams.
But the funny thing is, since it's included with our Marvel Unlimited subscription, I started reading that Marvel digital. What do you call them? Digital originals. Whatever those new stories are on the Marvel Unlimited series, you know, the vertical scroll that all the kids like these days. So hoping that will answer my questions. See, the thing is, I guess I'm not sold on what they're doing or what the characters have decided. So this story is like sort of bridging the gap in between the eras. So I'm reading this story, which is fine enough in itself. I don't know. Maybe I've feel different if I was paying for it. Like, I guess I'm technically paying for it, but, you know, not like $5 a month. So I'm hoping this will answer or convince me of why this era needs to be like it is, I guess. So it's got me reading that online series. Because I kind of said, well, I should read more of these series, right? Because it's there. It's new comics.
Yeah, I read a bunch of Jeff the Shark ones a few years back. So it fit that format really well, those kind of fun stories.
And you'll find it funny, Andrew, Omega Red is making an appearance.
Hey, he's the big bad of the Marvel Universe, so look out, Doom.
To round out the X-Men new issues, I tried Exceptional X-Men number one. Because it was the Kitty Pryde book, and that's exactly what the first issue was. It's like Kitty's, it's like she's the old gunslinger who hung up her guns, and she's trying to live a normal life and forget the past and just start over. But of course, stuff happens, and you remember who you are, and you gotta act and be who you are. And then at the very end, there's an Emma Frost bit. that she's like lurking in the shadows or whatever. And I mean, they seem like they really like pairing up Emma and Kitty these days. They're good to play off of each other. Like instant group dynamics to play around with. But so I'm like, I read through it, and Ewing wrote it, and the artist was Carmen Carnero. So I get to the end of it, and I'm like, Ewing wrote that? And I go back and I look, and it's like, oh, it's Eve Ewing. It's not that Ewing that I was like, where was the? I'm like, fine. It's like, this is a pretty soft read for a Ewing book. And then I'm like, oh, okay, my bad.
It's like Marvel saying, we got Moore, and everyone's like, oh, Alan Moore? No, John Francis Moore. Oh yeah, you know who isn't lurking in the shadows? Emma Frost on that cover.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I've been into pocket universes myself. Been enjoying the late 90s M2 universe, particularly on the Unlimited. They have like 100 issues of the Spider-Girl. DeFalco Olive book so far, mostly. I haven't gotten too far. I'm really I always like that little pocket one. It was started when I was, again, out of comics. And it seems so far pretty manageable. They have a lot of weird characters, but it's not like some of the 90s stuff I get that's positively hampered by crossovers to the point of this is part one of 12 and three of the parts are in four different titles and all that type of stuff. It may get there, but so far it's very self-contained. I mean, I know there's all the other M squared titles, so I'm sure there will be crossovers, but it's not impossible to read this.
Juggernaut's an Avenger.
So it's fun. The setup also, only being several issues into this, that we're changing the status quo up as far as who knows her secrets, and she's establishing. They even put like a zero or half issue or whatever it is, one of those wizard special things in there. It was fun. That I'm sure came out not in chronological, or I don't know when it would have come out. But yeah, just a fun Spider-Man back in high school, but this time it's his daughter. What? What happened to Peter? He was in some terrible incident that caused him to retire and instead go work for the police. And, you know, so there's the tension about what his daughter will do. And then, you know, she's obviously going to go become Spider-Girl. Because, you know, it's in the Parker. What Parker can resist the temptation? So it's all these half-step removed, like you said, Juggernaut's an Avenger and this person's daughter or son of this hero. It was just a fun way to, for me, like I've enjoyed when I dabble in the Ultimate Universe, but for some reason this is a more successful, and I just think this is probably pitch for old people is why. Like this entree was more fun than doing a complete cold reboot that's a shadow of it. This is a shadow, but it's a more fun shadow because they're playing with the generational aspect.
So it's like a DC book. This is pitched for people that wanted a married couple, and you know, after Spider-Man went one way with the Clone Saga, this was sort of the other way. I find it funny when you referencing certain things, because I'm like, well, you're going to see, you might think they're original characters maybe, but like you're going to see Clone Saga characters definitely, or of the 90s era anyway, show up in that book. But we should team up and read some issues together.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Like I said, I've always liked the kind of breezy, and maybe it changes, but in the beginning, you feel like each issue has a lot going on, even if to me, it's a satisfying read. Like when I read an issue, I'm like, whoa, that was a good amount of comic book, you know, feel that now all the time, but sometimes you read a comic now and you're like, boy, that felt like chapter one or whatever.
her first appearance was the last issue of the ongoing What If series, like the second volume of that, and used the whole spider baby thing. And they got letters back when letters would drive things like, oh, man, all right, let's give her a series. And then they gave her a whole line.
And yeah, that's
pretty wild.
I always thought of this as a Friends book. So it's fun with all the Olive artwork. I'm like, oh,
right.
I like that, because I don't know why I had Friends in my head as the Spider-Girl artist. I mean, I'm sure he worked on some part of it, but
yeah,
for some reason.
It's that Untold Tales of Spider-Man connection, you know?
Yeah, that was in my head. Olaf. And I'm like, yeah, he's on some of it, but it's a lot more Olaf on this than Friends. At least, like I said, I'm only in 100 issues. That's the other part, too. I'm pretty excited that there's a lot of this. It's not like... I mean, Friends, I would have been fine with a little bit of it, too.
Friends did the Avengers book, the A2 book, I think. He was involved a lot in the designs of those other M2. I think they called it M2, right?
M squared and Wolverine's daughter and all like that. It's such a fun, silly take on the Marvel Universe that I like, that I'm tickled by to no good end. We'll see how it lasts, but so far, big thumbs up, and it's just all there on the Unlimited, so that made it nice, because I'd read some of these, they had the little trades, and I'd read some of them out of the library. That's how I knew, but I don't think I read the Spider-Girl ones. I think I read the other titles with all the different legacy characters done in a very different way.
Yeah, I remember not picking up the series at the time. And I don't know if I probably wasn't in the mood, if I would have had room anyways.
For me,
I started getting the trade paperbacks, and then, but that was kind of, it became a little, I think they like paused or something, and now they're definitely like gonna close it out, but I started finding issues here and there. So I'm like, I might as well just get the entire run, because it's not like it was easy to find, but it was just odd how I would run into batches of the issues. So I was like, I might as well do it, right? I might as well just get the issues.
For me, even though it wasn't oversized, the What If issue was enough for me. I didn't need that expanded on. Like, I got it. Like, oh yeah, she could have been Spider-Girl. And you know how those What If stories gave you one story, but then your imagination ran wild rather than actually getting the stories of everything else in each of those universes. But it's pretty cool how that evolved, especially since the What If series ended with that issue too.
All the What Ifs I remember, Steve, didn't leave a universe to imagine.
Well, other stories can happen.
Dark places often.
Things don't go so good. Wouldn't have been good if Doom wasn't, Face wasn't bad or whatever. If Doom was a hero. I thought of you, Andrew, because I read the Incredible Hulk annual that just came out, the 2024 annual, and it's written by Derek Landy with art by Jeff Shaw with a Salvador LaRocca cover. And the thing with all these annuals this year are that they're all tied into different Infinity Gems, right? And some weird, random new character has an Infinity Gem. And here some guy's got the Mind Gem, I guess it is. And he recruits Colleen Wing from the Daughters of the Dragon to be his bodyguard. And she's like, why do you have me being your bodyguard? And he's like, well, you know, the Mind Gem tells me or whatever. And I know you're the right person. And she's like, well, I don't know. It seems like this is out of my usual wheelhouse or whatever. And Thanos is tracking the Mind Gem and comes upon them like in the woods and attacks this dude. And kills him. I mean, just totally destroys him to get the Mind Gem. But the Mind Gem, having maybe better better personnel decisions than its wielder did, had been calling the Hulk. And the Hulk arrives. And even though the Hulk is kind of pissed about being drawn there, because the Hulk hates being manipulated in such a way. He decides just to be difficult. He's going to keep Thanos from getting what Thanos wants, which is that little rock. So it's a great Thanos versus Hulk, a very physical battle out in the woods so they can knock each other into trees and hit each other with trunks and bury each other in the snow and all that stuff. It's a good battle. But what made me think of you, Andrew, was Colleen Wing ends up with the mind gem and delivering the blow that makes Thanos leave. But with her with the mind gem, as she's swirling her sword around there in the costume, the way they had it detailed, she very much seemed like at least my version of the character from the Midnight Suns video game. I mean, she's almost a dead ringer. And I had to wonder, then when I looked back at the dude's design earlier, he had a little like hood on. Too, that it's like, oh my gosh, he looks like sort of like the male version of what I forget what even the character was called, but the hunter. Or whatever.
The hunter, yeah.
Kind of funny, but it made me think of you in that Midnight Suns game.
I think I picked up one issue of one of the comics, but it was not anything that landed for me. But yeah, well, you gotta like a big punch up comic with the Hulk. I mean, that's his bread and butter. You gotta let him swing. So Colleen Wing, not Bob Diamond, Steve.
Then, Kevin, I thought of you because of the Hood character that you used to be more interested in than I back in the day when he first started rearing his hooded head. And the last issue of the current Ghost Rider series, Ghost Rider Final Vengeance, written by Benjamin Percy with art by Danny Kim. It was six issues. And the thing was that the Hood stole the spirit of vengeance from Blaze.
That's so weird.
So he's got the Hood and the Zarathos spirit of vengeance in him. And he's leading a bunch of vampires. And something tragically goes wrong. And he realizes he was lied and tricked. And all that business. And this issue, I really hadn't enjoyed the series much, but this sixth issue is like the showdown where Blaze comes back to take the spirit of vengeance back, and it leaves both characters in new status quos, although thankfully Mephisto's still in charge of hell. It's not like Blaze or Strong Guy or something like that.
Strong Guy.
But so at least the regular old Ghost Rider. But it's weird when he takes the Spirit of Vengeance back and he's talking about, like, we've had all those great times. And, like, he's going through the different things. And one of them is him as the Danny Ketch Ghost Rider dealing with that albino vampire character that I forget what it was.
Oh.
But it was like, wait a minute, that was Danny. That wasn't even you. Like, wait, whatever. It's all Ghost Rider, whatever. All right, want to do one more bonus round since it's our 17th anniversary? You got one more book each, or should we quit here?
I don't have anything left.
I wanted to say the not – this is my getting in trouble with Marvel noise, but the Kickstarter for the Marvel G.I. Joe comic has released the digital. So they're reprinting the entire thing in whopping huge four volumes, but I have gotten my digital – collection of the bunch of them, so I've started tucked into that. I have all the issues, but it's nice to have them in one place, in some ways. So, and that way I'm not futzing around through short boxes. I don't have long boxes anymore. Move to short boxes, kids. You're back. Well, thank you. You think, oh, I'm young and strong now and I can stack 12 long boxes on my shoulders and everything, but believe you me, there'll come a day when you move one of those things and your back will go, oh, hello. And short boxes weigh a lot less. So big fans there. But yeah, so I'm enjoying examining G.I. Joe Marvel style.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't know if I ever brought up the Thunderbolts Jam piece on here. Was that indie? Did I talk about that on Indie?
Yeah, because that's all you do at those conventions is Marvel stuff. So,
but since I have a Red Hulk on my Thunderbolts jam piece, think about that. The guy that always made fun of the fake bolts has a Red Hulk on his Thunderbolts jam piece.
Red Hulk 2099?
No, I wasn't that forward thinking.
Is Red Hulk on your Thunderbolts jam piece, Kevin?
So, because Red Hulk is on there, I got to do every era. So, I got to find the perfect artist to do the Battler. Daniel Axum needs to be on that jam piece.
Wow.
You could be the only person that's request. The other one you should request, Kevin, is Charcoal. You could be the only.
Yes. That's right. Commission. And people will be like, yeah, I need some reference. I don't have a clue who this character is. This obscure, like, nobody character that you want on here.
All right. Yeah. Since it's our 17th anniversary, I got a bonus anniversary book, which is a 50th anniversary special of one of my favorite characters, Iron Fist.
Yeah, I saw they were doing a Deathlok one as well.
They are. This is my year. A snazzy Alan Davis cover on the Iron Fist, and a real nice looking Ken Lashley cover on the Deathlok one too. But this had five stories in it, 3 8-page stories, a 5-pager, and just a 1-page gag too. The first one is Chris Claremont and Lan Medina. So it's Claremont going back to his era of Iron Fist during Iron Fist series before he even got hooked up with Luke Cage. And it's after issue 15 of the series, the end of the series. It's him training with Wolverine so that he can better handle himself the next time he faces Sabretooth. Like, remember, Sabretooth used to be an Iron Fist villain. And the Wolverine that he's fighting is Wolverine in the, Shi'ar Fang guy's costume of the day, which is great because that's how he appeared in Iron Fist 15. When X-Men made their appearance, when it was the first time Byrne drew X-Men.
That, as much as I love the 70s, that outfit might be a little too 70s for you.
But was Claremont Byrne X-Men in Iron Fist, though? It was pretty cool. The second story is Iron Fisticuffs by Alyssa Wong and Von Randall, where the new Iron Fist, whatever his name is, I don't even know, saves a bunch of residents in a collapsing building from the Shocker, who is making the building collapse. Then the third story is Emergency Call, Justina Ireland and Elena Casagrande, where the Daughters of the Dragon think they're on a mission, but it's Iron Fist looking for help at some community gathering event thing. But then there ends up being some trouble, and Misty and Colleen play their part. And it's good to have them included because they're a big part of the Iron Fist mythos, having been introduced from his book and then into Power Man and Iron Fist book. Then there is a Heroes for Hire 1-page fake ad that is written by Frank Thierry with art by Ty Templeton. And it is a sequential. It's almost like a Hostess ad thing, but it's not a Hostess. It's not that tongue in cheek, but it's a fun little, I almost thought it was Scott Collins when I first looked at it, but it was Ty Templeton. And then the last story is Happy Birthday, Danny, written by Lou with art by Will Sportatio, where Luke Cage and Jerwin, the old business manager for Heroes for Hire, go out and have a birthday drink with Danny and reminisce, like, you know, remember that time kind of thing, and lets them call back to, and they do have footnotes to say, oh, that was in Power Man and Iron Fist 50 or that kind of thing. That ends with the editor having a couple of pages to wax eloquent about the character, and he shows 10 of his favorite Iron Fist covers. And when he first encountered the character, which is hilarious, the editor of this book first encountered Iron Fist as an overpower card from the old overpower game. And in Maximum Carnage from his appearances in that series in the late 90s, or mid 90s, whenever the heck that was. So pretty funny. I picked up, I think it was the second issue of Marvel Premier with Iron Fist, when it was the Larry Hama drawn Dick Giordano inks, or maybe it was the first issue, but I was kind of onto the character right from the very beginning. Like Moon Knight just sort of rose up through the Bronze Age with those two characters, really.
I don't know why, cool, Steve.
Marvel doesn't license with some snack cake company. Little Debbie, Iron Man things or whatever.
Right? I mean, they basically do call back nostalgic ads like that for free as gags.
Yeah. Right?
Why not insert a real product in there? Even if it is Little Debbie's, that's still tongue-in-cheek, right?
Yeah, it just seems like it would be... They had some limited edition thing. Because the Star Wars did an Oreos thing lately that seemed to be popular. And I was like, oh, you know, I would have a little, I don't know, Apple Hulk apple pie or something like that. You know what I mean?
Apple pie.
Maybe you have them little disc cakes, but they look like Captain America shield type of thing.
Speaking of apple pie, I'm going to go stick 17 candles in a slice and celebrate Marvel Noises, long storied history here.
Maybe I should try sign off and you and Kevin go through previews for
all. Yeah, right. One of these days, Kevin, one of these days. But thanks, guys. I mean, you guys have been here for most of those 17 years, too. So couldn't have done it without you. It takes three faces to make a living tribunal. And, you know, we can be judgy at times.
That's for sure. Yeah, maybe I've been here for more than half now.
This has been your Marvel movie minute.
Get on that scroll to watch.
Until the beast cuts himself shaving down there. Make mine Marvel. Later.